Hi, everybody. I know some of you, not all of you, but I hope to hear from all of you through the course of this conversation. I'm going to talk for some time, then we're going to go into breakout rooms and we're going to come back together as a group. So that's what you can expect of the next 55 minutes. We are recording this call. We will send out the recording of this call afterwards, along with some links of some of the things that we talk about. And we encourage you all to be engaging with each other on our listservs as well as we continue this road together of leading in our Jewish community. So a few more housekeeping things to start with. I want to thank those of you who shared questions in advance of this meeting. I know Nina sent out a message asking for the kinds of things that you were interested in talking about. I've incorporated responses to some of those questions into this presentation. And if I haven't, because there were a bunch of really good questions and that would have taken us in a number of different directions over the course of this hour that we couldn't cover all of, then I would encourage you also to reach out to your liaisons for further conversations. Each of you has a liaison in our office who is associated with your community, and there'll be lots of opportunity for additional conversation. In addition, I want to say that many of you have participated in our monthly series of leadership calls. Some of you, this might be the first time we do a monthly series of leadership calls. I would say that all of those leadership calls are in one way or another about leadership development. The whole series of calls is designed to hone in on areas of your work that we hear about the most from you, the things that you would like most help in developing. We will talk specifically about some of the issues related to engaging membership and recruiting volunteers today specifically. We have done versions of that on some of our other calls. So I want to say if you're new to these calls, or maybe even if you're not, I encourage you to listen to some of the calls in our archive because they might address some of your questions if we haven't talked about them today, or if you have additional questions. In particular, in relation to today's subject, I want to point you to our two-part New President's Workshop series that we did in the spring, and we're spring summertime. And we've also done a version of the call that I'm going to do today. Each of the past Decembers, we've done it in different ways with different foci. One of the years, we did a series of presentations from former congregational presidents who shared their own experience and their own really helpful ideas. So today, it's mostly me talking, but if you want to hear from each other in a previous call, I encourage you to do that as well. We'll include the link to the archive in our chat, and we'll send it out again with the recording further on. Okay. Let's turn to today's business. I'm going to share my screen with you. Let's make this screen. Can you see a set of slides that says Congregational Leadership Development? Yes. Okay. So now when I'm sharing my screen, I can't see all of you. So you'll have to just shout it out if I don't see a hand or a comment that is coming up. Okay, now are you seeing the blessing for community work? Okay, everybody, unmute. I love the cacophony of everybody participating in the blessing for community work. Let's do it together. Baruch Amen. Lovely. How full of blessing you are, Eternal One, our God, Majesty of the universe, who has consecrated us with your commands and commanded us to occupy ourselves with the need of the community. So to start with, I would say this blessing reminds us that you are not only trying to run successful and sustainable institutions, you are also nurturing people's souls, and you are maintaining a spiritual home for your community. And this takes special people who not only have traditional leadership skills like planning and managing and budgeting and programming, all of which are necessary to being a good leader, but also skills that are grounded in Jewish values. And sometimes the business-oriented texts programs don't acknowledge this distinction. I will say there are lots of good nonprofit-oriented leadership texts and programs out there. If you Google Jewish leadership development, you'll find lots of materials from your local federations who offer training programs or workshops, or there's some good blogs. We'll point you in to some of those if you are interested because they are useful. But it is also important to remember that you bring a Jewish lens to this work. And we are going to focus today on some of the things that are most particular to developing leadership for Reconstructionist congregations. See a picture of Mordechai Kaplan here? Okay. In 1948, Mordechai Kaplan defined community in this way. A community is a form of social organization in which the welfare of each is the concern of all, and the life of the whole is the concern of each. So I want to talk a little bit about the value of community for a minute. Community, I would say, is about living in mutual relation with each other. As individuals, we are interdependent, and we are also obligated to each other as part of a shared collective. And I think we're often better at being committed to each other at the interpersonal level. We celebrate together in times of joy, we help each other in times of need, but we also need to support the entity that is the congregation. And that is the structure that holds us all together and allows us to do the work that we need, that of support for each other as an entity that's bigger than ourselves. I know that I'm preaching to the choir here, but that this is an important thing to keep in mind as we think about engaging members and recruiting volunteers and developing leaders. In Reconstructionist communities, we strive to maximize the participation of our membership in democratic participatory governance structures, right? That's rabbinic voices, that's lay voices, that's professional input, and in doing so, in maximizing that participation, I believe that it's the idea of mutual responsibility at the heart of that that makes us us. I think it is important to say that it is both true and it's a good recruiting tool. I think it's important for us to identify clearly also who the we is here, who's the community that we're talking about. I think often the process of leadership development involves a small number of people. We could call them insiders if you like, who brainstorm together about who to ask to step into leadership roles, right? That is done, that who's on the board, who do you know, who can we bring in, whose arm can we twist, et cetera, right? That is often what happens. It is easy for that process to replicate bias to those people who are already comfortable and already involved in the congregation. So we need to be intentional about how we bring in more diversity into our communities, whether we're talking about the community that is the board, whether we're talking about the community that is a committee, whether we're talking about the community that is the synagogue itself. Before we can talk about recruiting people into leadership roles, we have to talk about engaging members. And I'm not even going to talk right now about engaging people before they become members, but of course that's important too. All of this is part of a process. For the sake of today's call, I want you to imagine one big pipeline with different levels of engagement that's all leading in the direction of congregational leadership, right? How do we get people more engaged? How do we get them to volunteer more? How do we get them to come more? How do we get them to serve on committees? How do we get them to serve on the board, et cetera? Not everybody's going to end up on the board, but we all benefit from deeper and broader engagement as an end in itself. For example, if we want more parents of young children to take on leadership roles, what can you offer that could ease the burden of their involvement? Do they need childcare for night meetings? That's one example. If we want more people of color involved in the community, or more Jewish adjacent partners involved in the community, or more LGBTQ plus folks involved in the community, you need to be able to ask questions that take other needs and experiences into consideration as you're thinking about what it means to be more deeply engaged. We'll come back to some of the specific strategies that you might use to do that. In the end, we could have at the end of this conversation, we could have a whole call today about engagement strategies alone. I'm talking about it at this point because I want to think about it as the first step in engaging people more broadly at different levels in our community. Okay, I'm going to start a little bit by talking about volunteer recruitment, and we're going to start small. Some of these things are going to seem sort of obvious, but I think it's important to lay them all out. Just even before I get to point number one, it's important for you to know who's in your community. As many people as possible, engage them in conversation, learn about their interests, learn about their talents. This takes time, this takes energy, and it is essential to the work that you're doing. At whatever level you're trying to get people engaged. I'm going to keep saying that, but it's true. Okay, point number one, invite them. Whatever it is that you're asking them to do, people generally need to be asked. They need to be asked. They like to feel needed. You don't want to assume that they're going to say no. Most people are not going to come forward on their own. And people in general appreciate being invited to participate, whether it's in a project or a gathering or to serve on the board by a community leader. That could be the membership chair. That could be the president. That could be the rabbi. But it is absolutely clear that person-to-person recruitment is always the most effective way to engage people. So whatever your role is in this process, I encourage you to set up coffee dates or one-on-one conversations with all congregants. I think it is important to the building of relationships. It's important to deeper engagement, and that is not only true of a specific ask, whatever it is that you have at the moment. I think part of that is also about establishing the culture of volunteering, because then an ask that comes with it can feel like an honor. I will say, as part of that ask, you need to know what kind of volunteer work somebody might be interested in. Some of our congregations do surveys. I encourage you, if you do surveys, to do them regularly, you know, to ask with membership or when you're asking for a dues enrollment, to ask people to update their interests. Sometimes people surprise you with what their skills are and what kind of work it is that they want to do, but you need to know. Okay, start small. If you're asking somebody to get involved in a way that they haven't been involved before, chunk out the work in pieces that don't seem too big, right? You want to break it down to break it down. I had one of my mentors talked about, you know, you say, I noticed that you helped set up the chairs for Shabbat services. Thank you so much. Can you come early next time and set up 5 chairs instead of 2 chairs? You know, can you, you know, whatever it is, you're increasing the level of the ask slowly. And be specific about what you're asking in that small ask, right? If you have had conversations with people, you know what their skills are, you know what they like to do, you have a better way of matching what you know about the person with what it is that you need. Some people are extroverted, they're emotionally intelligent, they would be good greeters. Some people like to work alone. They like to work on discrete projects. Honor people's preferences. Use their strengths. Right? This might seem sort of obvious, but it's important to name. What do people like to do? What do you need? Make that match. Be clear about the timeline for whatever the expected commitment is. Is this a one-off thing? Is it a month-long thing? Is it a year-long thing? Can they be flexible? I'm talking about small volunteer options, but like these things are true at the level of the board also. I'm seeing things come into the chat which I am not able to monitor right now. Nina, will you just let me know if, okay, thanks. Next point, people want to do their jobs well. Support them, right? You ask somebody to do something, you want to give them the help that they need in order to do that. Sometimes that's a mentor. You might want to think about pairing a more seasoned volunteer with a new volunteer to help that new person get to know other people, to learn about your community. I think most people appreciate having a good mentor, and the mentor is enriched by that experience as well. Been thinking a lot about the idea of generativity, of what it means to give over one's wisdom. And that's important to people's development and sense of self, to be able to share what it is that they know. People want to do their jobs well. Make sure that they have enough information to do their job. Give them clear instructions. Have them know who they need to ask if they have questions. Give them guidelines, parameters, etc. This is where job descriptions come in, right? This is for small tasks. It might just be, here's a little short written description of what the project is overall. Here's the piece that we're asking you to do, right? You want to cultivate buy-in with people so that whoever you're asking to get involved in something is excited about the project and understands what their role is in its success. It's important to create clear expectations, and in terms of creating fair and inclusive communities, it is really best practice to articulate specific guidelines and norms and standards and processes and structures and all of those things for any set of tasks that you have. This is true for board roles as well. I've been talking about small things, but I just want to be clear. Board roles have job descriptions attached to them. If they're not written out as job descriptions, they exist in people's heads. So I encourage you to write them out, right? Job descriptions are helpful because it helps. In the same way as it's true for a smaller point, it is important to understand what is the role of the president so that everybody knows what it means to be the president. What is the role of a vice president? What is the role of this particular committee chair? These are the descriptions are necessary for the board as a whole to function as well as the individuals who might be considering taking on a particular task. Now I'm going to make an aside here because I have some job descriptions and some board role descriptions that I'd be happy to share with you. But I will tell you that the most complete set that I have is from 1998, literally. So please, if you have board descriptions, job descriptions, please send them to me. The one that I have is excellent. That particular one that I'm referring to is really excellent, but it is also from 1998. So please share with us so that people don't have to reinvent the wheel. Okay, people need to feel that their work is valued and that they are appreciated. Thank them. Gratitude is your best tool. People need to feel acknowledged. They need to feel thanked. They need to, in order to stay involved, in order to be motivated. When you feel valued, it's easier to do the hard work, right? You want people to feel connected to each other. You do this in the short term, you do this in the long term. It is nurturing, it is empowering, it is important, right? You want to acknowledge that people are giving the gift of their time. You can do that in lots of different ways. You can feature them on social media. You can do a gala event. You can write them thank you notes. You can thank them publicly at services. There's lots of different ways to do that. But I just want to emphasize that we none of us want to feel taken for granted for the work that we do. I know all of you probably on this screen feel would benefit from more thank yous for the work that you do. So thank you. Thank you for the work that you do. Finally, on this one, I would say that there are a lot of rewards to being a community leader. This is not just about the thank yous. This is not a, we're not paying our volunteer leaders, but people don't just get paid in money, right? People get what is some of the benefits that I would offer as things that board members receive as part of their service. Is learning and growth and success and social connection and a sense of doing good in the world. Sometimes it's skills, right? Sometimes it's you learn how to be a bookkeeper and then you become a bookkeeper. But I think there are lots of ways to emphasize what the value of the work might be that I want to encourage you to consider. Okay, finally on this point on this slide, not everybody wants to be a community leader, and that's okay, right? All of what we're talking about is about engagement in general. And if somebody's going to stop at any point, that's okay. It is also true that sometimes it's just the wrong time. You make an ask of somebody and they have specific time constraints. You might want to ask that person, can I contact you again with another opportunity in the future? You're planting seeds. It's never a bad thing. You want to help somebody envision themselves as a volunteer in the community. Again, this is part of the, you need to invite them, right? Sometimes somebody hasn't thought about themselves as a leader. They've just been coming to services and, being happy along the way. And somebody asks them to take on another role, and suddenly they see themselves as something different in the community. That's an important process. That invitation allows them to envision themselves into a different role. Okay. Identifying, I can't see my screen there. Identifying potential leaders and succession planning. Uh-oh. Some of these, I'm going to go through these sort of quickly, getting to know your community. Oops. Okay. My screen is behaving strangely. This is a longer list. How do you identify potential leaders and how do you think about succession planning? Your goal in thinking about leadership development is to develop a pipeline. That's an ideal to strive for. Leadership development in general is a long game. You may be thinking about who's going to be the president in 8 to 10 years, right? You're introducing ideas and you're giving people skills and you're thinking about getting them ready, developing capacity. Thinking about who in the community, because also people are going to fall away along the way, right? You're creating a bench, right? You're creating a bench that's ready to step up to fill empty roles when they exist. So recruiting new leaders is an ongoing shared responsibility. It can't just be the president. It can't just be the membership chair. It's all of you in whatever role you're playing in the community. Keeping an eye out for the people who are showing up, keeping an eye out for the people who are, maybe they're at Hebrew school pickup and that's the time that they have available. What do you do with the time that they have available there? You should always be on the lookout. The fourth bullet point here, giving new folks time to acclimate before recruiting them to leadership. It is never a good thing to have somebody come to services for the first time and then to say, "Hi, are you interested in joining the board?" Right? Like it's sometimes we feel so desperate that there's such a strong need. You want to give people time in that process. But there's lots of different ways to bring them in, lots of different asks. Okay, I think there's much on this slide that we've already talked about. Okay, before I turn to the next one, I want to say, I'm looking at the time and I want to make sure that we have time to do all of these different pieces. And you don't want to hear from me the whole time, just talking at you the whole time anyway. There are two slides here that I'm going to identify, and then we'll share them out and you can think about them more later. There's a slide here that says, what are the things that people need to know when they join a board? How are you thinking about board orientation? What do folks need to know as far as training goes? There's a slide here that's about texts, and there's a slide here that's about ideas and people. In general, it is important for somebody who's coming into a leadership position to understand what the community is, who the community is, what is the mission, vision, and values, what are their bylaws, what's the history, who's who, an org chart, what are all of the texts of the community are important to share. I'll send you this slide. You don't need to write it down, Right. But this is an example of the kinds of things that you want to make sure that you're offering as part of the board manual or and in advance of bringing someone onto the board, because people need to understand what it is that they're coming into. They need not only texts, they need to understand the ideas and the people of the community. What is the culture of this community? What are the things that we're talking about right now? What's at the head of the agenda every week because it's so important to us at this particular moment? What are some of the strategic challenges that we're facing at this minute? What are the committees working on? How do we engage with our folks? What does our communication look like? How do we share data? How do we build relationships? Who are the big moppers in the community, right? All of these things are all of this is information that somebody coming into leadership needs to understand. It feels like a lot. I'm giving you a lot of items on this to-do list here. I think it is very easy to say, "Oh my God, there's no time for a board training. We just have to do the business of the community." I want to assure you that a training will ultimately save you time and aggravation. It is important for people, again, to feel prepared so that they can do their job well, and you'll get and you will get better service out of them, out of the, that sounds very expedient, but I hope you understand what I mean. People will be able to do their jobs better when they have more information. Okay, some of this I'm going to I'm going to run through quickly. I've collected a list of different kinds of skills and sensibilities and competencies that folks might be thinking about in terms of leadership skills when you're trying to think about who you bring on board. What's important to me about this particular list is that you're building a team, right? No one person's going to be all these things. Probably no team is going to be all these things, but that when you're thinking about how you imagine the collective that will be the leadership of your community, you want to be thinking about spreading out that those skills amongst the group. Okay. This is an example of what I'm calling here a traditional leadership path. But this is one way that you might think about someone coming into a community and entering leadership. You might bring them in and say, "Okay, can you come in and be a greeter for this week's services? Would you please volunteer?" And then over time, you ask that person to train another greeter. You know, that's a little bit more responsibility because they've shown up and they're doing a good job. And then maybe they become the volunteer coordinator for all the volunteers. And then they join the membership committee, and then they become a board member, and then they take on a vice presidential role, and then they become the president-elect, and then they become president. That's sort of a traditional path. I'm seeing people smiling on the screen who have taken untraditional paths. Right? Many of us are not taking these traditional paths anymore. So one of the things that we're going to do as a group is talk a little bit about other ways to engage. I'm going to invite my colleague in this next slide to give an example of one other kind of path to leadership, and then I want to open it up to you. That's sort of the heart of the Here's my initial presentation. We're going to go into breakout rooms and we're going to have more conversation after this as well. And then there'll be time for questions and we'll come back together. Okay, other paths to leadership. Michael Weiss, would you like to talk about justice circles, please?
I'd be honored. Hi, everyone. So good to see you. I wish I could repeat everything Tressa just said in all my consultations. Awesome job, Tressa. That was really helpful. what I want to offer is some theory and also an actual program that we're building out for this spring. The theory is one of meeting people where they're at and being open to creating new opportunities for engaging in the congregation of interests that people bring to the community. And I want to differentiate, this is different than saying, Sure, we can do any new program that you might want to do, regardless of the budget or the staff time or the stress for the board. Definitely not what I'm saying. When you have your governance set up, that there are able to be committees or groups that are able to operate somewhat autonomously with regular check-ins from leadership, there's an opportunity for people to start something new with their own leadership and initiative. And one of the kind of growing sites of interest and opportunities that we're seeing in the field is models of small cohorts doing some kind of justice work together. And the trend has started growing that we're gonna offer a spring kind of like series of info sessions on the different models that we're seeing from our partners. And we're gonna encourage you to kind of think at these winter, these months in your relationships, who have you met who has just been like so passionate about immigration justice? Someone who has said, yeah, I'm not gonna be a greeter, I'm not gonna join the board, but they might really like to get together a circle with five other people who haven't been involved in leadership and organize a welcome circle to help resettle a refugee family. Or someone who, you know, said like, yeah, don't see myself going to committee meetings on a weeknight. I got kids, I gotta make dinner, I gotta do the dishes. I hear that it's on Zoom, but like, I'm just so tired by 8 o'clock or whenever that starts, there's no chance. But they might actually be really interested to do like a Dianu climate justice circle that meets on Shabbat afternoon after services with childcare at a time that works for them and their cohort of friends. So I'm just going to share the teaser list of some of these models that we have talked about. Highest Justice Circle for Welcoming Refugees, the Workers Circle, formerly known as the Working Circle, is building a new model of democracy circles, doing local democracy work. Dianu is doing these climate action groups. National Council of Jewish Women is launching a new initiative of reproductive freedom Tefillah designation program, where you do an internal study process about making your own community kind of a safe haven for support of reproductive justice. We have like a monthly action program called the Jewish Earth Alliance, where you get to do specific kind of wonky letter writing and calling around climate policy issues of the moment. The More Perfect Union is going to be working on mobilizing poll workers and getting congregations to help with that for the 2024 election. And you don't have to write all these down. We're going to send it out. And your task is going to be to go and say, who is that person I know who I cannot get to serve on any volunteer leadership, but will not stop talking about poll workers? And they're the person that I'm going to get to start a More Perfect Union poll worker group, organizing that through the synagogue, using the strengths of our networks, right, their relationships, to do good work out in the world as a Jewish community. And then they're in leadership, right? And then they have a stake in the community. They have a position. They start taking pride in the good justice work their community is doing, feeling more of a stake of ownership, right, and involvement. And then you take them out for coffee and say, you know, what would be really great is if we had a poll worker person on the board, right? We need your voice for justice on our board. Would you consider running next year? And maybe you'll do it that year, right? But there's, by meeting folks where they're at with new kind of opportunities for engagement done sustainably and reasonably. Again, to be clear, you as the president or the leader or the two-on-one committee member cannot start all of these groups yourself and staff and run all of them. It's about getting new people, new opportunities, and saying, I think you might really like this and it would be wonderful for our community. And this is one particular model we're offering, but there's all kinds of creative things happening everywhere. I was just at a synagogue that has a farm. And that's a big way they've built their young people membership, is they built a nonprofit farm on their synagogue. And so these folks who would have thought about like joining a synagogue wanted to get involved in the crunchy, lovely Jewish farm. And some of them have become members. Maybe that works if you're in Western Mass, maybe it doesn't work if you're in Manhattan, you know. But I think that when we go into breakout groups, you might also have some great examples of kind of that, not that traditional path, but way that we creatively heard an interest, created opportunities, and people started stepping into leadership in really beautiful and new ways, and then became the president 10 years later, whatever it is. Because we do still have to fill those roles, but building a culture of ownership of the community can start in a lot of different ways. I'll end there.
Thanks so much, Micah. I think that's great. And where you just ended, the building a culture of ownership is the first step. I think there was a question, I was able to look at the chat just for a second. There was a question there about how do you establish a culture of volunteerism? I think that part of it is exactly what you're describing, right? It's a culture of ownership. It's a culture of being having responsibility for and active solicitation of your interests in whatever it is that you are that you're doing in your congregation. Okay, we're going to go into breakout rooms now, and because I think that you have what to teach each other on this subject. I had two questions on my slide, and I think we're going to just go with one because I think that we probably need that time to talk. So I'm going to ask that you share a success that you've had in bringing someone new into leadership in the last couple of years. Share a success that you've had. It's an opportunity also for you to talk to the other people in your group about some of the questions that might have come up. We'll come back together. We'll share some of those successes. We'll take other questions from the call writ large. But we're going to go into breakout rooms for, let's say, 12 minutes, Nina. Come back together at 1:50 so that we can, so that we have time for a little bit of closure. Okay, I'll put the question in the chat. Let's just do that quickly while we get ourselves ready. Share a success. Going to say, it's always what happens. Somebody's in the middle of saying the most exciting thing that was possible to say, and we get zoomed back into our main room. So, okay, I want to open it up. We're going to do this sort of popcorn style, I think. Feel free to, let's see what happens if we just say, just ask people to shout out an answer. What are some of the successes that you heard in your groups?
I loved the idea that Marissa shared about not sugarcoating the time commitment and what's exactly involved in whatever volunteer commitment you're asking somebody to make. Normally we tend to want to do the opposite. I'm sure we're all nodding our heads. And she was really clear about how that helped her find people who were committed to the work because they felt it was really important and were able to fulfill on it at the same time because they understood what was expected of them in advance. Thank you for that, Marissa.
Great, thanks, Hallie. Other responses. If you feel better raising your hand either virtually or electronically, I will take hands as well.
I like the idea of asking for mensches rather than asking for volunteers. That sounded like a great idea.
What does that mean?
So instead of saying, I'm looking for three volunteers to do whatever this weekend, to say, I'm looking for three mensches who can help with the same task. I just want to know what the female version of mensch is.
Same.
That one was for me. And I've noticed since I started using that language that people are more apt to volunteer because they want to be a mensch, and it feels better than volunteering your time for some reason.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. I saw you raise your hand.
Yeah, I was encouraged by Jean's story about a volunteer who came forward and is doing a great job. You know, miracles happen. It's Hanukkah after all. And thank you. That gave me it made me feel better.
So just the fact that that somebody stepped up
and and is apparently doing a terrific job.
Uh-huh.
You know, it can happen. Don't forget. Yeah.
Hanukkah miracle. Great. Thanks, Lane. Other thoughts?
I'll just say in our group, an idea that a few people had tried and it's successful is not talking about sharing a committee, but rather being a coordinator or a project director for a particular task that is time bound. as a way of getting someone to taste what it means to be in a leadership position, and hopefully then continuing in other ways, and maybe even bringing in somebody else to say, hey, come help me with this.
That's great. So renaming the job, for, you know, from chair to project manager was demystifying in that context, and was and made the job clearer and more doable. Great, thank you, Mark. And then it will close up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to mention apropos of board training, one of our great early leaders, Zifrana Verlivraha, Natalie Black, created the name for our board training. Instead of calling it a board retreat, we call it a board advance because we never retreat. And just the name of the meeting, which happens every year after the election cycle, gives that meeting meaning the meeting such meaning. It makes it a very significant way to start someone's board service. The person who's been leading our advance for the last several years has been giving out a signed reading. So a month before the advance takes place, she gives us all a book. And the last two books we've been assigned to read were both by Ron Wolfson. First one was Relational Judaism, and the next one is the newer book called Creating Sacred Communities, which are about relationship-based leadership in congregations. And it's an eye-opener. I think it's exactly what you always talk about. You know, it's helping board members to understand what their role really is and how to develop engagement.
Great. Those are good texts to turn to for that question. Yeah. Thank you, Mark. I love the idea of a board advance, leading the advance rather than leading the retreat. Such a different orientation, right? Anyone else have anything that they want to share? There were some questions in the chat before. If you want to take, we have 3 minutes left. If you want to ask anything of each other or of me, we can use those 3 minutes.
Someone asked in the chat about like successful like modes of communication with us. My mm-hmm. most recent ones, aside from people who like I have met regularly, so I'm a board president, and has been like an email about the ask. I don't get into details of what the ask is. It's usually like, this is it's a specific task for JRC that I think is suited to your skills in X, Y, and Z, like your skills and interests. And then it's I have time on this day and time or this window of time. Does that work for you? And then if not, come, you know, call me. So I usually then do a call back. That has been sort of the most successful method of an email advance, and then making sure your phone number is in your email, because then when you actually call them, their phone will recognize your phone, and like then it's all, your name will pop up, you won't be a spam risk. But that's been the most successful. I do have to say, you know, we often know like who does the ask is important. I have gotten better responses now that I'm board president than I did as I was our previous VP of membership. So I'm just saying, as presidents and co-presidents, there is some of that, what Trust was saying, of that cachet of asking, and, you know, our rabbis then ask for some things too, but I've gotten better. I get better hits rates. My batting percentage is better as president than I was as just a, you know, VP.
That's an interesting thing, because then the task is to figure out how to divide the labor, right? The rabbi can't make all the asks, yeah. Right? Even if that there's, but to be able to look at the collective and sort of firm out who does what. Yeah.
Or at least the initial ask, and then I'm not explaining how to do that role. I'm just making the introduction afterwards, and then they're usually being stopped. So aside from actually asking the next like board president, like then I have to actually teach them how to do that. But it's been, you know, it's usually a fairly quick conversation. It's not, these aren't 2 hour long, and then I spend a week training them kind of thing.
Yeah. Great. Great. Thank you. And thank you all. Thank you all for everything that you do that brought you to this call that is in, that is designed to help you and your congregations to bring more people in so that it isn't just you. We really are grateful for the work that you do here at Thriving Communities. And please don't hesitate to ask your liaisons for further follow-up questions, to put things into the listserv chat. And we will, as Nina has said, send out the recording and the slides to everybody who's registered for this call later in this week. Sending you all wishes for a happy rest of Hanukkah in the days that you have left. May there be only more and more light. Bye-bye.